Welcome to episode something. Chris, I don't even know how many episodes we've done now. We've got, because we had the two-parter there, so I guess we're on episode five technically now.
Episode
season two.
Four.
Yeah, but episode two was two parts, so we're kind of
okay,
episode
yeah,
five
yeah,
now,
episode
right?
Five, yeah, let's call it episode five. Let's do it.
So we've got Eric Dewey DeWitt on the line today. Eric, welcome.
Hey, what's up?
And, you know, he's probably got one of the most well-known street mod cars in North America right now. And the development on that car has been very steep. And by the end of the season there, it was posting some almost, you know, times that might have been unimaginable the year before. So welcome. Really happy to have you on and look forward to hearing a little bit more about your story.
Well, I'm happy to chat with you guys. I've been big fans of both of you guys for a long time. You're both people I looked up to when I first got into this, and it's awesome to be able to chat with you guys.
So you started with what?
Yeah, it was. She's my wife now, but at the time she was my girlfriend. We got her a silver STI because she needed a daily, and I it's really easy for me to keep a Subaru running because it's what I do for a living. So we got her an STI. She wanted a silver 05, and that's what we got her. And then I stole that car from her to go to a track day. And that was my first grid life event. I did an HPDE thing there, and I realized that some of the times I was turning with this mildly modified STI were pretty close to what the street mod times of that era. So I decided to do time attack the next year, and rest is history. But yeah.
So did you get your wife something nice when you stole her car?
I got her some dents in that car, unfortunately. I smacked a tire wall with it. I ate that car alive. And then every time something would break, it just get more and more race car. You know, I ripped AC out and all. By the time I finally did, well, she doesn't quite have it back yet. It's currently with Al's Auto Body. Those they're running around the pits with that that S4 that they bring out for street mod. But they're fixing it up for me. And last picture I saw, it actually looks really nice, which means I'm not allowed to drive it anymore. But it's coming back together. She'll have a nice car again. I just bought her a brand new cross track though, and I got a BRZ as a trainer car, and then obviously the Impreza L that I bought from a Canadian, actually, Brandon Cocker. He was the guy I got the chassis from, and then took that from a track mod / Global Time Attack Limited car back into street mod.
That was a pretty good purchase. You know, had a lot of nice parts on it and stuff like that, and the cage was done already. And you know, he's been a buddy of ours for a while, so we were happy to see that kind of stay in the family, and you know, kind of now doing some very impressive.
The only part of that car I got, unfortunately, was the chassis. I didn't get any of the suspension. I kind of had a front subframe in there. The rear was completely gone. All the parts were gone, but it gave me something to start with.
But you got a cage.
The cage is worth the money right there. Like the cage alone was worth it. I looked into who did the cage, and you know, it was good stuff. So I was super happy with that pickup for sure. I had another GT I was going to do a nice cage too, but this popped up about the same time I was getting quotes for cages, and it just didn't even make sense. So why not?
Yeah. And it was nice to see that car actually continue as well. Cause Brandon actually messaged me when you guys first started talking, and he was like, "Hey, do you know who this Eric guy is?" And like, you know, "Do you know anything about him?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, no, he
messaged me." I'm like, "Who the fuck is this Eric?" Oh, Dewey?
Dewey, and he's a good guy, and definitely sell your car to him because I want to see this car keep going and not wind up, you know, in someone's backyard or in someone's garage.
One of two things would have happened with that car. It would have rotted in somebody's garage, or some fuckboy would have ended up with it, and it would have turned into, you know, somebody would have stanced it. It would have been terrible. I guarantee it.
100%,
and then instead you decided to join the "I crashed my car at M1 Concours."
Yeah, dude, it's the best. I mean, I never knew.
I never realized, man. Chris, we're all in that club together.
Yeah.
Chris, you're the only part of the club that's not in the cool club. Dewey and I went faster than we did.
I hit that thing and I could not believe we put it back together. It's still in that form. I have yet to fix any of it. It's still just duct taped together. I got Home Depot like strips of aluminum with self tapper screws, just kind of making a skeleton. Like it's really bad.
Dude, it's April. You're supposed to work on your car.
I know, but then all this crap. I'm not allowed to work on my car till after first of the year. Unfortunately, it's just kind of the way things work. And we're moving shops, so we've got a lot of stuff going on. And my car just sits at the shop, and I'm about to pour a pile of money into it, and then all this crap happened, and it doesn't make a lot.
You say all these things, but if there was an event coming up in 2 weeks, all of a sudden it would go full ham.
Yeah. I'm hoping I can convince the full hamness earlier this time, because man, so last year I bought this car. I put like maybe a week's worth of work into it, and then I had to go under the knife for I had a tumor that it's basically in my head. It's not a brain tumor. It grows off from my auditory canal area and pushes towards my brain. So it had to be removed. So I had to go get surgery on my head that took me out for like 2 months of the time I was supposed to be working on this. The second they were like, okay, you can go back to work and kind of function like normal, it was nonstop, no sleep, slap this thing together as fast as humanly possible. And that's
I don't think that's what they had in mind.
No, they're like, you know, you can ease back and work. I'm like, race car right now. They were, when I told them what I needed, they're like, so what do you do for work? Oh, I, you know, internet sales for stuff. And like, oh, okay, so you know, do you do any sports or anything? I'm like, oh yeah, I drive race cars, and this is just kind of something I need to get sorted out real quick. Oh, okay, cool. When's your next race? Oh, in like a month. They're like, I don't know if you can do that or not. Well, we're doing it. This is happening. So you do your best to get me back in order. Yeah, the physical therapy sucks.
And you're like, oh, and during this time, I'm also, weren't you buying a new
house? Yes, I was buying a new house and having a baby all during that same time period. It was rough. I don't know how my wife stayed with me. I would have murdered me.
You can't murder.
Yeah,
a
see,
with
I
a brain tumor.
I'm. She won't let me blame anything on the tumor anymore. It's not fair. It was such an easy out to anything. Oh, it's a tumor,
sweetheart. I didn't hear.
Well,
what you
now
said.
I get to pull that because I'm deaf in one ear.
Ooh, so you'd still
that's what you know. If I'm gonna, I tell you what, I get the best sleep if I lay down on my good ear. So my dead ear's up. I can't hear anything. It's glorious.
Is it completely
zero nothing? We don't even think the nerves connected. So it's gone.
Oh, wow.
Which for a car that's as loud as mine, I remember the first time I met you. I wish I would have been deaf in that ear because your exhaust was still coming out of your door. We're at Mid Ohio, and they pulled me right next to you. So coming in my driver's window was your exhaust. Oh my
it
god!
That loud, was it?
that was the end.
I don't think you've never been to Toronto Motorsports Park, but they have lots of weekday test days and stuff like that are actually sanctioned by the track, and so it's really easy to get out for testing anytime you need. They do like Monday days. Wednesday nights, Friday days, Friday nights, and then there's usually like people that have rented the track on the weekends. But they don't, it's not mandatory helmets. So it is amazing when you're coming up on someone the first time and when the exhaust was through the door and you're on the driver's side you're on the left side of them passing them and they have no helmet on and they don't know what to expect. And you can, if you peek over as you're going by, you can see the panic to get their hand up to their ear as you go by. It's like,
I can't imagine being on a racetrack.
Probably everyone I ever passed like that has permanent damage.
I just can't imagine being on any form of a racetrack without a helmet. That's like mind blowing to me.
Yeah.
I think that, I think Chris, if you, I think it was due to different ethnicities and not, you know, some people not being forced to because I think even the police here don't have to wear like the police hat and stuff like that, because we're just very multicultural and very into, you know, not forcing people into anything. So I think that the helmet and the car thing came up at the same time as that whole legislation.
Yeah, they do enforce it. If you have somebody in the car with a helmet, everybody has to have a helmet. So that is something that they do enforce. But yeah, they don't force you to put a helmet on if you go on track, unless the car is like a race car, in which case, you know,
I mean,
the guy will kind of come over and be like, hey,
I'm sure there's like, if you're with any form of sanctioned body too, they're going to be like, hey, if you got a cage, wear a helmet kind of thing. Yeah. Any of that. But if you're just doing local track days,
it's only like when the track puts it on. Most lapping days that go there require it. Not all. I remember when Professional Awesome came the first time, they're like, people are standing on the wall, people are on the track with no helmets. They're like, this is like the Wild West out here. They're like, we didn't know we were going to go north into the Wild West.
I want to come out to some of you guys' events really bad. I got to get my situation sorted with Canada. But as soon... Well, yeah, I'm like kind of... I may like or may West. Not have a little bit of a warrant up there for a... it's really not that great. I had a radar detector and didn't realize I wasn't supposed to have it when we were making a really stupid trip around Lake Huron. And then it wasn't even just pay your ticket. I had to show up for court, and it was in Sudbury, which was the furthest part away from where we were.
Yeah, there's no close way to get from.
And I'm like, I just don't think I'm gonna make this. I was so poor then. There's no way I could have afforded that anyway. So, I should probably get that sorted now.
They're probably
they definitely don't.
I doubt they forgot.
So I don't mind paying it. If I got to go up there and do a night in the clink, I'll do it. If it means I can go.
No, you should get it sorted out, because we're doing some. There's some rowdy things going on in Canada.
I've looked at some of you guys' tracks too. They look amazing. It's just, I've never had a reason to go back to Canada until now. I had to send a buddy to go get my car.
The Time Attack tracks are not as nice as some of the other tracks. Like our Toronto Motorsports Park it's fun. It's a good track. It's definitely. It's seen better days.
You've been to Michigan, or you've been to Gingerman, though. I'm just saying.
You need to come to TMP, because if you think Gingerman,
that's what I like to hear.
Come to TMP. We don't have functioning washrooms.
You don't need none of that. So. You don't need any of that.
I think they got that back together, Chris. I think they got them working again.
No, they didn't.
I thought at the end of last season they got them.
No, we went right at the end, and like wherever, I guess before we went to M1, and they were still not.
You can run a grid light festival there with that. It's fine.
I don't know. I think that it's just the coolest Time Attack track, though, because it's, you know, maybe the only track where anyone actually cares about that you can go to in North America, where you can stand in pit lane and see the whole,
that's pretty cool,
whole facility. Now that does mean that it's a bit flat, and it's not, you know, it doesn't have any trees or anything like that, but the fact that you can, you know, you have your buddies out there helping, you know, dial in and stuff like that, and be able to kind of see the attitude of the car and see what it's doing the whole way around.
That's one of my favorite parts of PPIR. Even though, unfortunately, that track isn't like super popular yet, I'm hoping GridLife can actually breathe some life into that. But that is a really cool track, because it's kind of a small roval, and from pit you can see everything, and I mean everything. It would make an awesome cool track to do the bracket battle style stuff on. I've been trying to pitch doing grudge brackets there.
Well, if it still happens this year, it's on our list.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
If it still happens this year, we're super, super pumped about that.
I heard the drifting was.
It was nuts.
Last year, you could.
Did you hear the story about Adam talking, setting up the nighttime drifting? So he walks up to the owner of the track, and this is how cool the owner of the track is. He walks up to the owner of the track, and he goes, "Hey, you know, we got this kind of hole in the schedule, and like we don't have enough people over there in the music area and whatever. Can we just run drifting?" And it's like 11:30 at night. And the response was, "Well, do you want me to bring out my flame truck or not?" So drifting's happening and there's all these lights and it's just crazy and people are losing their minds and the concert's happening behind the drifting. So the concert's going on with the drifting. And in the background, you see this like semi with these smokestacks just blowing these like 50-foot flames out of it. It was insane. It was like something out of Mad Max. It was seriously one of the coolest things ever. And I don't even get into drifting. That was awesome.
Yeah, no, I really hope that event can still go on in some form this year because everyone that went there, it sounds like the early days of Gingerman. It sounds like it just had the vibe, and I just want to go out there.
I could see that growing into something huge, and I think it's close enough to entice some of the West Coasters who believe that the only thing on the planet is California, and maybe get them to come out our way a little bit and meet in the middle.
Yeah, I could see that.
Make sure you got the cooling figured out on your car, though, because, whew, man, that was brutal. I was figuring I was going to be down on power. I might have to play with a tune, you know, something funny like that. But I was not prepared for it, how your heat exchangers just do not exchange heat with that thin of air. Imagine that.
No, that's too funny. Well, Dewey, tell us a little bit more. Let's hear a little bit more about the development of the GC and, you know, kind of what you guys have done engine-wise, turbo and stuff like that. And then leading up to some of these brutally fast laps that you did towards the end of the season there. Because it's that lap at Road America was just bloody rowdy. That was just
so when I built this car, I'd always been looking at street mod. When I was playing around in street, the whole goal this whole time was street mod. I've never had a goal of going past street mod. I don't care about track mod or unlimited. It's not something that, not that I don't have the utmost respect for those classes. It's to me, street mod was always something that was going to be very applicable to not only what I like to do, but the stuff I try to sell. So it works really well for that. So street mod's always been interesting to me. So what I'd always wanted to do was build a maxed out rule weapon for that class. Graham had built, who's also my tuner. Graham has been killer these few years, but Graham won his class by almost a landslide with a kind of the same concept of car, which is his was a GR STI, so a 2011 STI with a basically built engine and a BorgWarner 8374 and supporting mods around that. Very basic aero. Car was still really, really heavy, but made a decent amount of power. And that's power that we've gotten really good at Six Star making for our street customers. So our guys who just run around for their, you know, they're weekend cars and things like that. Mid 500, 600, super easy for us to do and keep really reliable. But
which is tough to say for, you know, like typically Subarus at, you know, past that 500 wheel horsepower mark, they start to get really difficult. So if you're able to go into the upper fives and even into the sixes and still be really reliable,
it took a lot of trial and error to figure out, but you know, we've been at it for a long time. And it was one of those things I wanted to prove we could bring something to the table and, you know, run a Subaru at 600 horsepower that wasn't completely insane. Either way, so I'd been looking at Graham's car and going, how could we do this better? Well, the first thing was we needed a lighter chassis. I always knew I wanted to do a GC anyway, but it needed to be the right chassis, and Brandon's car ended up coming up.
Because the GR would weigh.
I'm pretty sure, with driver, he was about 3,500. And that's, even if we were to go really, really hard and keep it within class rules, I bet you the lowest we could get his car would be like 33, if we were lucky. Due to the very shortened time frame of how long I had to put this car together, I never actually got a corner balance, so I have really no idea about what it weighs. I got a concept, but I knew I could cut probably about 500 to 600 pounds out of that immediately. So we were probably around that 2,800 pound, and then with driver, probably about 3, which I think we ended up a little lower than that, but that's what I was aiming for. So we'd knock a bunch of weight out of it. The car's physically smaller. I really don't like the multi-link suspension of the 08 and ups. They have some really weird quirks where they do funny toe out things at goofy times. And so the old Max Strut, even though it's kind of an archaic, crappy design, I know how to make work for me. So the GC worked well. So we kind of had the formula of what we wanted to do, but area under curve is everything when you're talking about this type of project. You want to get the most power for the widest power band you possibly can. So what I ended up doing is, instead of going with a 2.5, which really doesn't like to rev past 8,000 RPM, and honestly doesn't like to rev past 7,000 RPM reliably, and I looked at what CanJam was doing with their 2 liters and decided to kind of take some of what I've learned with 2.5s and apply it to a 2 liter and run a plus 2 millimeter rod 2 liter to help the rod ratio out a little bit and just rev its nuts off. So it's really happy at 8K. We were really worried about there being enough oil pressure up there. So we got in touch with Daily Engineering and got their dry sump kit for it. Unfortunately, we were still new with the Haltech, so we weren't able to get past 8,200 RPM, throughout the season. We figured out why, but we should be good, with the bottom end that Outfront built for us, for somewhere around 9,500 to 10,000 RPM. And it, yeah.
Oh,
and the thing is, that's why we put that gigantic hot side on that turbo. And we're just going to run till it the turbo isn't happy anymore. As long as we don't go past wheel speed or the turbo isn't just diving. That was the plan, is just rev its nuts off. And then I put a really short ratio gearbox behind it. And the combination works, obviously. And that was the approach I took. Instead of, just trying to get crazy power, it was take a look, take a step back, look at the entire picture of this and pick the parts that make the most sense to make the most area under curve in the area you're going to use it. And that's how I ended up with a 2 liter. And I because of this, Graham loves my car so much, he ripped his 2 liter out almost, or his 2.5 out almost immediately and bought the exact same 2 liter I have. So Graham will be on a 2.5. Yeah. Graham will be on a 2 liter also.
No kidding. No kidding. That's impressive.
I think it's the right choice.
Because his 2.5 is worth
I think we've seen this from a lot of different competitors. That 2.5 motor just doesn't seem to really
it's an NA motor that got shoved into turbo duties so they could make 300 on P91 octane gas. That's the reason it happened. It wasn't because it was a better engine, it's because it accomplished this very narrow goal of what they needed. And it has a ton of problems. The cylinder walls are really thin. It really doesn't have the greatest head gasket design. There's a lot of serious problems with it. And the rod ratio is awful. It's terrible.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And they want to make a lot of torque. It's hard to turn the torque down on those engines. And at the end of the day, that's what's going to kill your gearboxes. That's what's going to cause you to have issues with your head gaskets because of the cylinder pressures and like all of these problems.
The funny part about this is, I made 3 or 4 more peak torque than Graham did, and like 10 more horsepower. His turbo did, come on boil probably about 400 RPM sooner than mine, but I had no problems just revving way past where he was and it being happy. So that's really what did him in. I had identical area under curve, even though I had to stop revving at 8,200 RPM. Next year, I'll be able to uncork that and really utilize more of it. But it wasn't stopping at all.
Can't wait to hear the
noise. Oh, man, I'm so excited. We did a couple of dyno pulls after we figured out what we were doing wrong. And it was... It's glorious.
No, that'll be really cool. And what are you guys doing for a gearbox on that thing?
Yep, it's a version 9 STI gearbox. So it's unlike the US domestic market or the North America domestic market. terrible earlier gearboxes where the first through fourth was actually designed for a 2 liter with an 8200 RPM and the fifth and sixth was designed for gas mileage. You have this huge gap between fourth and fifth. You take that same gearbox and you take the JDM fifth and sixth and stick it in there. Then you end up with that ratio essentially. And that's what a version 9 box is. And it's the shorter gearing is really nice. It feels like once I hit fourth, I feel like I just keep pulling fourth gear. It's so nice when you're on like Road America or Road Atlanta.
That's awesome.
I mean, I was hanging with Chris down the straight. So that,
yeah,
I was pretty proud of myself there.
I was like, holy crap, like he's got some power there. Cause I'm like, usually that doesn't really happen.
Man, I wish I could have seen the rest of that weekend out. We ran into our first ugly failure there. We had two, yeah, I mean, you're going to, with a new setup like this and you're learning stuff, you're going to find weak points. And, we found our first one there. We believe that maybe a bearing got damaged before we had the dry sump put on because we didn't have all the pieces of the dry sump for that event where we kind of just went on a testing run at Gingerman. And we think turn 9 at Gingerman, maybe slightly hurt our motor there, and we've been fighting it that whole time. But then after we got that sorted out, unfortunately our dry sump gave us some issues at Road America, where I set that time and literally the lap coming back, I went into the pits and Abe was running up to my car to go, holy crap, you just ran a 221, and then crunch, that was my idler. My dry sump is actually powered by my timing belt, and the bolt that holds one of the idlers broke. So it jumped timing and the oil pump stopped. So I ate a bottom end and ate my heads all at the exact same time. Oh my God. It was
the worst possible thing.
I was so pissed. And that's why I'm switching off of that setup for this year. I love having a dry sump. I just can't trust that design anymore.
Yeah, that's scary, especially because it's tied to the timing system. Like we had something similar happen to us at Road Atlanta this year, where we pulled into the pits and the car shut off, and I couldn't figure out why the hell the car shut off. And it was actually the Link ECU saying, oh, no, you have no oil pressure anymore. I'm shutting the car off. And luckily, I started the car, we drove it back to the pits, and we had blown a turbo at that point. And we were finished putting the turbo on, and Eric had his head over on that side and realized there's no belt on. Your belt is off on your dry sump. And we luckily looked at it in the data, and it literally happened right as we were turning like into where our pit was.
Oh, you got so lucky.
Shot off right there. Yeah, it was the best time it ever could have happened. And we got very, very lucky. But ever since then, it's been like every time anything's going on, you put your head in, you check to make sure that you know, everything
yeah.
is where it should be. it's scary.
It's one
it
of those
really
things. I don't know if all drivers have this problem, but I definitely have this problem where I constantly question the information that's being given to me by my, either my ECU or my dash. Like there's no way that's what's going on, whatever. And then it usually is, and I'm getting burned in some way. So my Graham and Sammy, the owner of Six Star, they have all sorts of insane fail safes on this car. So if I do try to blow it off, it'll kill all boost. I'll get like a 4,000 RPM rev limit. Like they make it all go away, which is probably fair. No,
like we can't.
No, I've gotten pretty good at turning the car off and turning it back on to see if anything comes back. But I don't like it when I do that.
This is not a 5-year-old
no.
BMW with an aftermarket tune on here. You gotta treat this thing with some love and devotion.
It's funny. You know, your guys are telling you not to do that, and Eric tells me to do that all the time. He's he'll be like, oh,
dude, just reset
the,
it, hit it, dude.
Car,
what are you worried about?
And I'm on the radio like, I think there's something wrong here. No, just keep going.
What are you talking about? Yes.
Oh, man.
I'm on fire. No, fine. If you go faster, the fire will go out.
That's friction from the air going over. You're going so fast. Just keep going.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're constantly on me.
Man. You know, dude, I was just going back to the gearbox stuff. You know, I think that's such a thing that is so missed by so many people. I think people focus on strong gearbox, and I think they focus on making big power. But I talk to people all the time, and, you know, kind of a bunch of people know me as the gear ratio guy with Honda and K-Series stuff anyways. And they're like, what should I use for this and this and this? Because with a K-Series,
it matters so, many combinations so much.
You can make. And, oh, it's such a, like, you know, everyone, when we went to the Dakota with the TSX this year, kind of everyone was like, you know, obviously the car was good in a straight
You're
line.
Still my hero, by the way. I want to let you know. You won me some money. Oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. But, you know, that car, compared to the blue S2000, Adam told me that he was told by him that it went fastest of 130 on the back straight. We only went 132. But when you look at the way the car starts a race and you look at the way the car's gear ratio is, you would not say when you see the, you know, when I go back and watch those videos, it did not look like a car that was only going to go 2 miles an hour faster down 1 mile straight away. Like, it looked like it was going to go 15 miles an hour faster, but the gearing is just so important. And we're really lucky with a K-Series stuff to be able to just mix and match. Like, I have gears, from five different transmissions.
See, you guys have that ability. The problem with Subarus is we don't. We literally have kind of like a short ratio and a long ratio. So since I'm constantly building, that's just it. Since I'm constantly building engines anyway, because I have a Subaru, let's be real, I just build an engine that works with the gearbox instead of build a gearbox that works with the engine.
Yep. But no, I think that, you know, if people can get something from this is, you know, when you look at your straightaway speeds at Road America versus your power to weight ratio, it was just insane. And, you know, you go back and it's like, well, yeah, the area under the curve is really good, but you know what, that, that sixth gear, that's not a big overdrive, crazy sixth gear or two.
Oh, it's huge. And where I really noticed it the first time, it was Road Atlanta. And it was in my silver car when we put the JDM fifth and sixth in that. And I was in sixth gear on the straight there, and that was crazy to me. You know, that car I had to shift at like 6,000 RPM because you're limited to this annoying little stock turbo. But that was massive there, and it was just night and day with the compared to Graham's car versus mine. We were comparing like old data back and forth at like Road Atlanta and things like that. And I'm murdering them by, you know, 10, 12 miles an hour on the straight. It wasn't even close.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's wild for a car with
the and we have level. our literally our setups are almost identical. Same turbo, same you know, same header, same turbo kit even. He's dual AVCS, I'm single AVCS, but you know, we both had dry sumps, aftermarket intake manifolds, same injectors. It was so similar on our setups and how close our numbers were on the exact same dyno, but how different the cars actually were. And don't get me wrong, I was beating them on power to weight. Yep. You know, I was expecting 5 mile an hour. I was not expecting 10 to 12. Yeah.
Yeah. 12 is a lot. 12 is a lot. Yeah. Yeah. No, I know when you had told Chris, how fast you went on the front straight at Road America.
Yeah.
Chris told me, and I'm like,
the dog was eating.
Come on.
Yeah. And the worst part about it is I think I could have went a little bit faster, but I was so scared shitless the car wouldn't stop at the end of the straight. So I was braking. So you'd see like the fifth, I was braking at the imaginary like seven, because I was just terrified it wouldn't slow down. Man, that was a crazy track. So I've played, you know, in Sims and stuff with that track a lot. So I kind of knew the basic layout, but was it just me, or is that track like really claustrophobic in the end of the straights, or was that just because I was going really fast and everything starts zooming around you?
I
thought in the second straightaway. Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
No, yeah, you go.
in the second straightaway, and then down into Canada Corner. It is kind of shocking how those trees are growing, especially that late in the season when the trees have really had a chance to grow, and those trees are almost feeling like they're growing over the track. My in-laws live on a really nice street, and the trees completely come right over the street in the end of the summertime, and I felt like the same feeling there, which is
it's terrifying. Cool, it feels like you're driving into a tunnel.
Yeah.
At 170 miles an hour going into that, it's like, this is just kind of a weird feeling.
Yeah. I felt on the front straight, it wasn't as bad. But yeah, through Canada Corner, I felt as you went further, I just felt like the track kept getting tighter and tighter and tighter.
Have you ever passed out before? And when you're about to pass out, like everything starts getting black and kind of coming in. Like that's what it feels like at the end of that second straight. It's terrifying. So I got a goofy question for you guys. The first car I ever drove in anger with aero was my GC that I have now. Was it like just a completely different thing for you guys? I had to almost relearn how to drive.
Yeah. I mean, I experienced it probably the most I've ever experienced it this season. With that splitter that we put on the car, it was such a big jump from anything that we had run before. And we've talked about it in a couple of other episodes, but one of the big places I've started noticing it is at Road Atlanta, like coming in through 9, like over that hill before, used to be so sketchy in my car, you know, and we were not going anywhere near as fast as we are now. You know, when we were going 140, 150 mile an hour, that felt like the scariest corner on track because the car was basically trying to plow through there all the time. And then now with all the aero on the car, you come through there and you're like, meh, it's not even really that big of a deal. You're setting up for your braking zone for 10. It's you know, no big deal at all. There's way, you know, it's almost like nothing really, right? And you're going, I'm going 167 miles an hour, right? but yeah, you definitely, you start to feel different about everything, and it you have to trust in it, and it's a weird feeling because it doesn't, you don't feel like you can go as fast as you can, and then when you do, you're like, oh wow, there's actually more here.
That was really weird me out, especially turn 12 at Road Atlanta and turn 1 at Road Atlanta. That was crazy how much faster I could go through there, and every time I went a little faster and kind of got over that little hump of, oh okay, I can go this faster here, it was just saying, oh, you could go faster and faster and faster, and you just kept finding time and time and time. And I can't imagine what it's like in you guys' cars, because mine, in the class that I'm in, I'm really limited. You guys can get wild, especially your front splitter, Chris. That thing is just, you know.
I've seen videos from Jim's car, and I will say I think my car is crazy, and then I see the videos from his, and I'm like, oh my god.
No, I watched this Road America video, and it was nuts. So, I'm like, how?
yeah.
So when we first got the new, front wing splitter, whatever you want to call it, on, and we did a test day at the big track at Mosport, like the week before Road Atlanta, for GTA. And we run like really crazy diff settings, so the car really like turns well under power, as long as the front is loaded properly. And with the new front wing, the car was loading the inside of the front tire so much crazier than how it was before. It made even like the diff feel weird. And then at the same time, it was the first time driving the car. We had tried for just a couple events a Garrett 3584 instead of the 3582 that we were using, and that thing hit later and harder, not just because of the more power, but just its characteristics were so much different than the 82. So I go through, kind of in my first lap in anger, I'm going through turn 2 at Mosport, which a lot of people know it's crazy elevation, really really fast in that car. And like on my first sighting lap, broke my previous best by 5 seconds. I got to power the first time in that corner in that car with all that front downforce. And the car actually turned in so aggressively, like I was expecting it to wash out a bit under power. And it turned in because I had so much wheel in it and everything was working so well. I actually turned too far. And the inside of the, you know, the titanium rub strip that's on the bottom of the end plate sliced like a 25 foot long. It looked like you used some sort of garden tool and like sliced the dirt and the grass up because that titanium hangs down fairly far. And it just sliced and diced the inside of the grass on that track because I didn't expect it to be able to hold its line that well. So it's been a, big learning experience with that car and kind of learning what it's going to do. You know, we put the 3582 back on after GTA Road Atlanta, and it really helped the car to be a lot more drivable. And, you know, it was just really good experience for us learning kind of how these turbos are going to change and kind of where the, you know, where, when is too much, right? And looking back at the data, I'm really bummed that we did make that change, because looking at the data and looking at minimum speeds, which were, you know, comparing to some other fast cars that have posted their times, not mentioning any names, you know, minimum speeds were faster. We were running a higher power level from what we understand, and, you know, getting back into the throttle earlier as well, but that bigger turbo was laggy enough that we were still getting beat to the next corners usually. So that was kind of a bummer to miss out on that record at GTA Road Atlanta, knowing that we probably gave it up just in spool. And it goes back to, you know, like you guys, you're just selecting the right turbo for your application. We got the 82 back on. And when we got the 82 back on after that, I went, oh my God, this car feels like it feels like we just night did a day swap in it or something like that. It just feels, the motor just feels monstrous. And, you know, from there on out, you know, we were just figuring it out better and better. And, you know, by the end of the season, even though it wasn't anything, you know, crazy, what we did at Speed Ring with that car, I look at, you know, other, like Chris will know, like it's tough to make a big
that track. It's tough to make any gains, but unless you have prestigious traction, where are you going to find the time? I get it.
so for us to have been, you know, 3.5 seconds slower than CanJam the year before, and thinking like, you know, kind of we're just at that event to have fun and, you know, try to be as good as we can be and, you know, post the fastest front wheel drive time that we can, to go from there to being, you know, I think we were within like 1.3 seconds of them or something like that this year. Just makes me really pumped, not just about the aero, but, you know, just the kind of development of the whole car, because it's, you know, as you know, like, you know, just the same way with you going from, you know, your first event at Gingerman in June to the way the car was at Road America. These cars are tough to get figured out. Like, we don't turn a lot of laps in these cars. There's a lot of figuring out, and it takes time. You're not going to do this in one weekend.
It's going to take them, like, you know, it's going to work. I had all of last season, and I know where there's more time. You can really see the difference between the few laps I got to turn in anger at Gingerman at Midwest Festival, because I ended up showing up there so late. I remember when I pulled the car off the trailer, you're like, that's not a street mod car. And then then in the fall, awesome, when we, Alex Moss and I, you know, really went to war. Oh my God, that was so much fun.
That was so much fun.
But how much better that car felt then. And it's easier for me to find time now, which is kind of funny, because after the car's starting to come together, I got a number in my head of what I think the end of the year is going to end on at Gingerman if we all manage to get out there. And it's going to be fast. There's three guys who can run the time. It'll be me, Alex, or Sean. Our street mod has just gotten so crazy. And I still think we're the fastest three guys in the country, in street mod, in that on street tires and discussion, for that, like, rule set. I'm calling it. You know, I really wanted to get that record versus Marcos at Atlanta, and unfortunately, that didn't come to fruition. But we would have been there. But that sucks. But
that was a tough weekend. You know, when you look back at some of the times from that weekend, and you know, I like to compare this whole like entrance into GLTC is enlightened my eyes, and you know, seeing what some of these cars that aren't changing so much every weekend have ran at other events versus what they ran there that weekend. And that track was not in pristine, you know, top setup to run the fast.
No, and but even then, I still believe that glory session on Sunday morning, that was like the perfect temperature for a car setup like mine. I think I could have did something really, really devastating then. I think we could have went 28s, no problem.
It's really exciting to see what you guys have done and the development, you know, of that class compared to, you know, even 2-3 years ago.
I still think it's funny when they look back at Graham's times and they were all talking about, oh, Graham, this isn't a street mod car. This is so crap, yada, yada, yada. And streets running the times he was, you know, we're 5 seconds faster than he was everywhere. It's just...
Yeah, it totally was, and he did.
You know, I'm registering mine to drive around on the street. I'm going to take it to some meets and stuff just to... I'm going to have to take it to get ice
cream.
That's fine. It'll be ice cream ready. I think it's fun. I thought that was kind of a cool rule, personally. But either way, everybody's idea of streetable is different. It is.
It's so subjective. And like, even when I was running in street and our car was still very much a street car, people would constantly be like, oh, that's not a street car. And it's like, it's not the class name.
They shouldn't be there.
Had the word street in the name of the class. Cause it's not, it's just a class.
Exactly.
It's Monkey Dishwasher. It doesn't matter. You build the car to the rules.
So true.
And if the rules say you can do something,
exactly,
you're not doing it. Well, that's your own fault. That, you know, somebody else does it. That's not they're doing something wrong. They're just
the thing I've been trying to tell people is street mod is not for street cars. It's for idiots, and nobody listens.
No. Yeah.
You know, there's a difference with street mod versus, you know, street or even in some cases track mod, where people build their cars for street mod with no intentions of going to a different class. They're building a street mod car. People build a street mod car, you know, and then people build an unlimited car. It's, you don't get too many people who go full out in track mod, and there's really not much you can do in street. But street mod is like this weird war zone where people build the car for that class. And I think some people are having issues coming to terms with that. You know, you have a lot of people in grid life where, or just in time attack in general, there are two types of people who should be doing time attack. The bleeding edge, tip of the spear nut jobs who'd sell their soul for a tenth, you know? Yeah. or the people who are out there for their own personal, you know, personal records, whatever they may be, you know, and they really want to do it in a timed environment. I love those guys too. That guy that's out there in that Ford Festiva, I love that guy. Okay, that's my kind of guy. And you never hear about him. He will never bitch about rules or anything stupid. But then what we have lately is we either have the guys who are out there just trying to get stickers on their doors and so they look cool at car meets, or you have these guys who are a little ways outside of the tip of the spear and they're mad that they can't figure out how to get there. And so they just start bitching about the rules. And those are the ones that really piss me off. You're not in the right game if that's what you're doing. All the time you spend bitching, you should be figuring out how to make your car go faster, whether it's find funding to do it, learn how to do it your damn self, whatever you got to do. But it's instead they just spend all day bitching.
And Street is
it's know, awesome.
If you want to complain, Street is a great class.
It's really close too. I love Street. Yeah, that's one of my favorite classes, especially to watch. And yes. If you follow Time Attack and you watch Street, Street is so close. It's so entertaining. The Speed Ring was nuts. You guys all filtered into the full bracket with no buys, so everybody had to race first round all the way through, and everybody was really close. The first you know, top six or seven all had a shot at winning it.
Yep.
Russ's car at that event was probably one of the most fun things.
You proved something I've been saying for a long time too, and that somebody's going to take a 90s Honda. They're going to put a proper K in this thing. They're not going to take the 2005 approach. They're going to take a 2020 approach to this, and they're going to hurt this class really bad. And everybody was blowing it off until you showed up with that thing. And now everybody's listening.
And it should
exactly. And it's usable because the car doesn't weigh anything.
Yep.
And I've been, Chris, I know I've told you about it. I've been pushing Russ to go the ways that we have of, you know, figuring out the big tire on the
You can have a 285 under there.
Front wheel drive allows a 280.
Yeah.
Yeah. A 285 3018 on the front of Russ's car, Chris.
It'd be insane. It'd be so good. They'd have to think up rules about it. And you know what? Nothing is more awesome than getting a rule written about you because you're so awesome.
I think that car with, you know, Russ still enjoys driving that car on the street and stuff. Like, if you were really pushing the limits of that car, I think that NA on a 285, 3018, RE71 or whatever, I don't think that, you know, 10.9 is out of the question in street. Especially that car, you know, being so light and agile at a track like that. And if it was just, you know, beastly in the terms of power,
it could be absolutely insane. And it would be 100% class legal.
100%. Yep. And that would be one of those things, though, again, you'd have to get the ratios right in the box, you know, because we know from, you know, back in the day when you start putting those taller tires on the all motor cars, if you get those ratios wrong and you lose that ability to kind of get off the corners the way that you want, that can be a little bit detrimental. But
this is one of those, this is kind of what I was saying. Don't take a 2005, like, you know, baby's first K-series swap approach to this, where these kids just throw some random, you know, RSX engine in and they're like, okay, it's swapped, we should be able to dominate the world. There's more to this. If they actually put effort in developing that car, it really could be devastating. If they even put, you know, half the effort that somebody like Spaz has put into his Evo, which really isn't all that insane, they'd run his Evo down, no problem. It wouldn't even be a problem.
Well, that's the thing is like, none of the parts that are really, like, Russ's car is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was an off-the-shelf engine. It, like, the parts that are in it are not crazy expensive parts. Even the transmission, like, it's mostly just OEM parts that you're kind of hobbling together to make the right gearbox. And it's really not that hard. And most of the formulas, it's not even like it's a secret what you know Jim has done or what you know Eric has done.
Exactly.
It's pretty well known, like how to make power in those engines and how to do it pretty cheaply, right? Like it's surprising that other people haven't kind of tried to go down that path, really. And I think it's just, you know, it comes back to your point. Just like I think there are a lot of people who are maybe resting on their laurels a little bit more, or you know, not optimizing to the class that they're in the way that they really should be. And, you know, you leave a lot of performance on the table when that happens. And you know, it's a shame, you know, because that's not Time Attack. I think at the end of the day, I think Time Attack is about really, really kind of trying to figure out how to go faster.
Whatever it takes.
That 10th or whatever it is, I think that's kind of whatever it takes, you know, sell your soul, whatever, like that to me is Time Attack, really. You got to keep wanting to push forward it's vicious and it sucks. But sometimes.
The thing about but it that, is, you really know, what we other all than
are trying to do right.
I'm not gonna lie. I've got my own. I've got my own rivalries and I butt heads with people. And we all do. But for the most part, throughout the Time Attack community, we all really support each other. And because the tip of the spear guys, we all look at the other guy who's at the tip of the spear, and even though he might be our direct rival, he or she might be our direct rival, we're all trying to do the same thing, and we can appreciate that. And that's something that I think those guys who are just outside of the bubble, they don't understand that. So yeah, that's, you know, those are the guys who are gonna cancel their grid life, you know, because it ain't going at the time it's supposed to.
Well, and you know, people that are not wanting to build the car to the rules in a certain way, because let's face it, Time Attack is, you know, for a lot of people, not everyone, but for a lot of people, it's about the wins and the records. And if you can't feel that, you know, that is the route that you're willing to take it to.
Exactly.
You always have the option to go and do something great like GLTC, where you can, you know.
And I don't want to speak for somebody like Jeremy Boysen, who is a good buddy of mine, but that's exactly the route he took. He's like, I got to be honest, Time Attack just ain't for me. And he's like, I have so much more fun doing GLTC that I'm not doing Time Attack anymore. And that makes all the sense in the world. And he's having a riot, even though he's having a lot of bad luck over there too. He's having a ton more fun doing that than he was doing Time Attack and having a lot of the same issues, but just not having as much fun. You have to love Time Attack to really commit to it. And that's something that I don't think a lot of people get when they first start trying to play around with it.
No, I try to explain it to so many people, and it even myself, I struggle with it sometimes.
Yes.
Because it really is a very binary sport. You either win or you don't. And it's really, because, you know, you either set that record that we're all chasing and you got first place, or you didn't. And there's very little in between. And it's like you have to almost kind of set up your own in between so you don't always feel terrible when you're not, you know, breaking your record.
There are very few times you can go home with a second place and be okay with it.
Chris,
you know.
Chris, if Adam Jabe were here right now, he would say, it's not supposed to be about that. Bad boy. You're supposed to go, try to get better, and enjoy yourself.
We can't help it. I can't count on my hands how many times I've driven home from North Atlanta in complete silence with my father for 16 hours because we're both just like,
yep,
what the hell just happened there? We didn't get the record, right?
It probably didn't hurt that you both.
That's how Road Atlanta's always worked. I'm either coming home, like the whole drive home, I'm cloud nine and I couldn't be happier, you know, or I hate life.
Yeah. It's just kind of one of those things. And I've learned now, like, I will say now, I try not to be that way as much. To me, it's more, I enjoy the experience. I get, you know, getting to see everybody at the track is, to me, almost more rewarding sometimes. But I'm not going to lie, I still want those records. And when I don't get them, it's tough. It's always a tough pill to swallow. Whereas in something like GLTC, you can still have a lot of fun being in the mid pack. You know, you're passing cars, and you're getting to have that experience.
A part of me is super happy that outlet exists within Grid Life too. So people who aren't, you know, running on the bleeding edge of Time Attack, they have something else to maybe aspire to get into and have some fun with. You know, if it wasn't there, you know, people would still want to participate in Grid Life, but I think they'd just get angrier and angrier.
Yeah,
I've come home from Road Atlanta from a Time Attack event eight
times.
I think one of those times
I was doing Time Attack, it wasn't this last year, but the year before was the only time I felt like I actually accomplished what I wanted to, and that's when I was in the street car and I ran that 37, that awesome picture of me and my silver car on one wheel going over three. That was I don't think I could recreate that
cool.
That lap again. I don't think it's within my ability.
Well, Chris, we've done it again.
Yeah, we have. Yep.
How's yeah. your 45-minute goal here, Chris?
It's not doing good.
Talking with buddies is just too much fun. It was a long hiatus, you know, being not doing this show. And, you know, we've just been having a blast. And, Dewey, it's been just fantastic having you on and kind of hearing your story. And we can't wait to see how you continue to push the boundaries of street mod in the future, because I think that you know,
I think there's a lot left already, on the table still.
You know, I think there's still a lot to come.
Oh yeah, I fully expect you to see that 28.
This year. I think hope we do this more. I think we got a 32 or maybe even a 31 at Gingerman's going to come. Probably not this year, but I think you're going to see a 32 this year. That's and it so won't rowdy. Just be me who runs it. I think we're going to have three cars on top of it.
Yep.
Sean is a monster. He's just a fucking robot. this is great, guys. I want to, if we can, I'd like to do this more. And plus, I'd like to have both of you guys on when I get this damn talk show up and running. Yep.
Oh, for sure, man.
Cool.
Yeah, that would be super fun. Yeah. That'd be super fun. Well, thank you so much for being on, and we've had a blast. And you know, if people want to like, subscribe, share, do all those fun things that you do, we'd look forward
keep it
to
up, it guys.
And look forward to doing more podcasts in the coming weeks.
Later.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Dewey. Take it easy.